Welcome to the Changing Scripts podcast. I have been documenting my experience learning simplified Mandarin Chinese on a YouTube channel for the past year and a half. Offline, I've been having conversations with anybody that would discuss language with me, and I want to get some of those conversations on this podcast. There are some really interesting viewpoints about the Chinese language, about learning the Chinese language, about language learning in general that I really, really, really want to capture and share with you. My main focus on this podcast is going to be twofold. I want to capture both perspectives. What are those perspectives? One is other people going through what I'm going through, probably further along the line of learning the Chinese language. So I'm going to interview people who are either in the process of learning or in the process of using the Chinese language, coming from outside of the Chinese language, from a language. It could be English, but it could be any other language. Don't worry, the interviews are going to be in English because I have that linguistic limitation myself, but they could be coming from any language to the Chinese language. Okay, so the second perspective is people who come from within the Chinese language to another language. Yes, I'm going to interview Chinese people on their experiences learning languages after their first language. And that is the conversation that is often missed when we talk about the Chinese language, is getting the perspective from within to outside. So I want to go in and out of the Chinese language from different perspectives, from people from different languages and those experiences. We'll talk about methods, we'll talk about in and outside of the classroom, we'll talk about usage, inevitably we'll talk about pronunciation, reading, writing, whatever the people that I'm interviewing are most interested in about their language learning experiences or about the languages that we're talking about. So there's a whole lot of content that we're talking about here. So these podcasts are going to get long. All of my information are in the show notes, and I welcome your feedback and ideas. And if you are learning the Chinese language or come from the Chinese language and have learned other languages, I'd like to interview you. Contact me and we'll hash that out. Let's dive into these conversations about the Chinese language because that is the point. Good evening. This is the first time I've had a three-person conversation about language learning, and I'm super excited and slightly nervous. So let's just go around real quick and introduce ourselves. I suppose I'll start. I'm Stephanie. This is an extension of the Changing Scripts YouTube channel. This is the interview version that is now in podcast form. I have been learning simplified Mandarin Chinese for, let's just say, a year to keep it simple. Incredibly slow, just took HSK2 and most likely failed it, but still progressing.
Hi guys, I'm Wang Yifei. I'm a college student studying here in Shanghai. Majored in pharmaceutical engineering. Though I am a student in engineering, I'm quite keen on languages and cultures. I got to know a lot of people by couch surfing and also going to those language exchange events, and these have been unforgettable memories of mine. Thanks.
Hi guys, my name's Phil. I've lived in China 4.5 years. Originally, I'm from England, and I've got like a good level of Chinese. I'm currently a master's student, and my courses are all in Chinese. And I didn't know any other languages before, so Chinese is my second language.
Awesome. So one of the reasons I wanted to have both of you here is that I've done some interviews of people just learning Chinese, and I've just been learning Chinese, but I've also taught second language learners who come from China, both just general English, academic English, and writing, but I've never had a conversation with someone who's learned English, and so I thought it'd be fun to get both sides, coming from speaking English to learning Chinese and coming from speaking Chinese to learning English. So, having said that, Yifei, what was your first recollection of learning English? Your first memory of being taught the language or hearing the language or.
I see. So for just like most Chinese students, I started to learn English when I was in grade 3, I guess, if I remember it correctly. So as I was roughly 8 years old, I guess. Yeah. And well, I don't really like that kind of pattern. So when I really get to learn this language by myself, when I was around like 12 years old, I guess.
In the time that I was in elementary school, we explicitly learned grammar. We like underlined and diagrammed out sentences and did stuff like that. But I'm told even in Evan's, my husband's generation, that they didn't do that. And I've heard in the UK that there isn't real explicit teaching of grammar. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. There's like none of that. Okay. And actually, just yesterday, I had a colleague ask, a colleague, he's Chinese and he's learning English. And he asked me an English question, and it was kind of like a grammatical question. Mm-hmm. And he asked me, do you say, how long have you been learning Chinese? Or how long have you been learning Chinese for?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about it, and I was like, well, both are okay. Maybe for is more grammatically correct, but mm-hmm. basically, I don't know. Either's okay. And so he asked, like, what did you learn in school?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was explaining to him just yesterday, we didn't learn any of that. Like, our English classes were, like, poetry, Shakespeare, mm-hmm. things like this. We never did, like, when to use an adverb or anything like that. And a lot of the grammatical, like, terms and linguistic terms I've picked up from teaching English in China
mm-hmm.
or via learning Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I need to.
So would you say, are you saying that you started learning the grammatical terms when you started to learn Chinese or when you first moved to China? Or is that the same time period?
It's not really.
Okay.
When I first came to China, I was teaching English, and I would say there sometimes my Chinese students would ask me, you know, like, how do I use this in like the adverb form or
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there was like a certain basic amount of vocabulary I just like started using and thus like, you know, got used to using. But I would say really was more, that really got drilled home and I learned much more, I expanded much more when it came to learning Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like, where do you put the predicate? And like, I had no idea what a predicate was until
mm-hmm.
about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
In third grade, when you started to learn English, did they start by teaching the grammar? Was it more spoken focused? Like, how was it taught?
I think it was more about vocabulary. So
mm-hmm.
they just teach you a bunch. Oh, they just give you a bunch of memory work. You're gonna have to memorize all the words every day, repeatedly. And I still remember I was forced by my dad to remember all those words. And I didn't want to, because
mm-hmm.
and for a kid, you don't really, I did not really have that much interest in learning English yet.
Mm-hmm.
And grammar, they teach you a little bit, but it's not that advanced. It's not like something you have to learn in junior high.
Mm-hmm.
About speaking, no, I don't think so, because in my primary school, that school was located in a very, small town, so we don't have that many resources,
mm-hmm.
like foreign teachers and all that, to just
mm-hmm.
practice speaking with, so I don't think speaking was one of those things.
And this is going to dig probably further back than grade 3 for you. How is Chinese taught to children, or to your class?
Okay, so Chinese. There is a lot of memory work for that as well, because
mm-hmm.
we know for Chinese learning, you have to learn how to do the strokes,
mm-hmm.
and you're gonna have to connect the characters to the sounds and to the meaning. So it's like a three-element system,
mm-hmm.
and you're gonna have to get quite familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
So that needs a lot of practice, but you practice it in various ways. Like
mm-hmm.
you see the character first, and then you pronounce it, and then you use it to make a sentence, and that's one way.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way is, let me see. So you compose it, an essay, using the recently learned words.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have some words that can be used to establish a sentence,
mm-hmm.
and they're scattered apart on the paper, and you're going to have to pick them out and then connect them using
mm-hmm.
one line, something like that. Yeah. So
how is this done in a classroom setting when there's 20 or 30 students in a class?
Oh, we have 60, actually.
60 students in one class?
Yeah. That's
wow.
normal, actually.
That's quite a big class.
I know, right?
How were these things done? Like you said, there was the sound and then the writing. Certainly every student can do that if they're no matter how big the classroom. But how do they practice pronouncing the words if there's that many students?
Probably the teacher is just going to ask you to stand up, and
mm-hmm.
then you Okay, so you pronounce this word. Okay, I'm just going to pronounce it. And if it's correct, and then he will let you sit down and not, and then you will kind of have you punished slightly.
And a slightly unfair comparison, but let's do it anyway. Phil, how did you learn? You took classes in China, right?
I took classes at university, yeah. So I studied one semester at Nanjing University. Mm-hmm. I just paid for that.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, I found out that there was a chance to get a scholarship mm-hmm. to do the master's. But I had to have a certain level of Chinese, and you had to be able to demonstrate that you were ready, mm-hmm. basically. So I applied for that. I was able to get it. And they provided a year's worth of Chinese tuition sort of first.
Mm-hmm.
And then if your Chinese is good enough, then you start the master's. So I did 3 semesters in total of Chinese class.
You did 3 semesters, and then you had the level to get into a master's program in Chinese?
Yeah. I can go through how we were taught, but, like, no disrespect to the teachers or anything.
Sure, sure.
But I wouldn't say it was taught, like, in a very effective way. I learned much more in my spare time, really, or having language partners.
Teachers have a lot of variables kind of set up against them with class size and resources and curriculum and deadlines that are ridiculous and all that kind of stuff. So I understand those parameters, but what were the things that you think they could have done in the classroom that weren't done?
I really enjoyed my first semester. I learned a lot in my first semester because that was when I was going from pretty beginner and I got to like sort of lower intermediate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where in learning language the classroom has the most value in those kind of levels. To answer your question, I really don't think, given certain constraints, there was anything a teacher could do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just naturally, the way I learn is I study for like 25 minutes and then I need to get up and walk around.
Mm-hmm.
I need that kind of physical movement. I can't really pay attention to just one person talking all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If they're addressing 20 or 30 students,
mm-hmm.
I would want like a small group, for example, and I want to be able to contribute. I can't listen for too long unless I'm really into the subject. Or I could do for one day for a conference,
mm-hmm.
but I won't want to every day, and that'd be the equivalent of like a full-time job is like listening. So these kinds of things, like how many students per class,
mm-hmm.
when we have break times, aren't things that are obviously controlled by a teacher. So under the constraints the classes were held under, I really don't think there's anything they could do. Yeah.
Are any of these problems similar to what happened in your elementary school when you were learning English?
Everyone's different, the way they learn, but the way I learn, I need to get up, move around, be a bit more physical. I also need to talk or interact in some way and not just listen.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm in that environment, it's not the best environment for me to learn anything. I do switch off. I do get distracted. And then everyone's wasting their time. So I guess it was that.
Okay, my primary school, I think it's just the opposite of what Phil wants. I feel I was oppressed. Well, for all the courses, it's the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to complete a certain amount of tasks within a day, and that's something you have to do. And in a class, usually one class will last for like 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna have to sit there put. You cannot move your arms, you cannot just gaze at other people.
Mm-hmm.
You're just gonna have to just gaze at the teacher,
right.
Listen to her or him talking for 45 minutes. No matter how sleepy you are, no matter how uninterested you are,
mm-hmm.
you're just going to have to pay attention. Because the class is, it's connected with your score. And the teachers and parents are all focusing on that. So,
yeah. Yeah.
A lot of pressure.
So it actually sounds like the language classroom was very similar, even though it was teaching children English, teaching adults Chinese.
Well, it would be, I think, because
yeah.
you're talking about the lower grade education
mm-hmm.
in China
mm-hmm.
and then learning Chinese in a Chinese university.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same educational institute, it's the same like setting, right? It's Chinese education.
Okay.
So
if I may, I will throw in some of my language, attempted language learning in the US at university level. Well, I can throw in high school, but that feels like it's too similar to these contexts anyway, because high school is very, very rigid in the US. Extremely similar to your elementary school. Yeah, it's
wow.
really, really, at least, it varies, it's a big place, but my high school was extremely strict.
Wow.
But in my university, I took Italian for 1 or 2 semesters and Spanish for 1 semester, and still, I feel like I relate to what you guys are talking about in the language classroom. I feel like it was a lot more listening to them talking about the language or using some of the language, but maybe for me or in general, very fast or very much so exactly like it's in the book where you didn't really need the teacher to do it. You could have gone home with the, at that point, this, well, it wouldn't even have been a CD. Probably would have been a tape at that point, but that's not the... So it was a lot of listening instead of using it to communicate or to interact like you were talking about.
But that's... The idea of what a class is so ingrained in people's minds, I think just generally around the world. If you were to ask someone to draw a scene of a classroom, they would put a board at the front, they would put a teacher in front of that, they'd probably put maybe a teacher's desk, and then they would put many desks with 30 to 60 students, right, sat there listening. Like, we... it's not like one country's idea or anything, or a cultural thing. It's just the way people think of education
general. So if we could reconstruct the language classroom only into a way that would be useful, what would that look like?
I have opinions.
Yes, yes.
I can go first.
And feel free to build off of each other later.
So if I was the educational institution, I can do what I want, then... The first thing I'd like to throw out is you can't control the outcome. Like, if the student's not interested, they're not motivated, this won't get great results, but neither would anything else. What would be best is, I think, to replicate the kind of scenario that a child has. So the environment a child has is effectively, they grow up with their mother and father, and your mother and father, as well as being your role models, are also your language teachers. So they only speak to you in one language, normally. And that will be your mother tongue. And they accompany you everywhere, pretty much. You spend all day with them. They always speak to you in this language. And they tone the language down to your level. So if you don't speak any words, they will constantly be repeating mama, baba, or say things to you that are really simple. As you get better, they just like will bring that level up, right? So that, if I had the money to pay two people I get along with to, accompany me just like everywhere, and maybe like one of them takes me one day, one of them takes me another day, so I get like two different personalities and talk about two different things.
Yeah.
Let's say it's Chinese even, so like my Chinese is okay, but there's a lot of room for improvement. So they started speaking to me at a level just above where I am now, and when I'm, you know, going into really deep stuff, they're going into really deep stuff with me and still using vocabulary to hire, so I'm not constantly like learning. And if it was a completely new language, then they don't speak to me in English at all, and they start with the words for like friend, teacher, I guess is the equivalent of like mama, baba here in this scenario, in the target language, and we work up from there.
So sort of like a language learning nanny, kind of.
Yeah, when you think about your parents, that's basically what they're doing.
Right.
So that's why kids, when they go into primary school, they already have like a pretty decent grasp of the language. And there's certain mistakes that no child makes in their mother tongue, right? And there's lots of mistakes they mind. They might learn new words, more appropriate words. But general sentence structure, like really quickly, they have it like perfect.
Well, it's not really quick. They have about 2 to 2.5 years of no output at all, or sound, just sounds but no actual words.
Sorry, yes, and I do know that. When I said really quickly, I was more thinking...
When they start to produce the language.
Yeah, I was thinking the rate of improvement is...
Definitely. No, and definitely, I like the idea of a language learning nanny so much. Throw in more writing for me, though. I want someone to sit down and play with the writing. What would your ideal scenario be?
Okay, from my experience, I think the classroom setting can be helpful as well. Because when it comes to questions about grammar, I think the knowledge I gained at classroom is really helpful. I was helping a guy from Switzerland to understand some Chinese sentences. Those sentences are not to be found in some general books, like novels and or on some TV drama programs. So you need to speak to, so he needed to speak to me. I could just use the knowledge about subject, verb, various forms of verbs and objects to explain the structure of sentences to him. That way he could just understand the sentence better. So I think it's helpful in that way. And about speaking, I think we need to get out of the classrooms, because how I approached speaking was by speaking to tons of people from different mm-hmm. countries. I was basically just searching for people online from different countries. There's the software popular in China, which is called QQ.
Mm-hmm.
I started to use it when I was in 12, and then I moved on to some other softwares, and then I explored websites like Facebook and all that. So the more people I talked to, the more confident I felt. And I think a better approach to help yourself learn speaking better is by typing to people first.
Mm-hmm.
So, 'cause typing allows you to think or ponder on certain grammatical rules or sentences orders for a while, and then you type them down and you can correct the mistakes. You can just incorporate what you learned about grammar into your writing
mm-hmm.
and speaking. Well, speaking is like a step forward. But I want to stress the difference between speaking and typing.
Mm-hmm.
When you speak to somebody, you tend to think very fast. You cannot just say, okay, let me think for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make the sentence real perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. You just need to drag whatever is on your mind mm-hmm. out of your mind and to express that. So I think, okay, I have some other ideas about speaking as well.
Mm-hmm.
So to establish a better environment for speaking, maybe online classroom can be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
That way you can get to communicate with people from different cultures. That's one way simulating the way I learned English, I think. Yeah, so that's basically my idea.
So it sounds like you're saying that speaking, it's more important to keep going in the conversation with speaking, whereas with writing, the grammar might be more important and going back and fixing it.
Yes.
Is that about right?
If you're enjoying this conversation about the Chinese language and would like to participate, if you're studying the Chinese language or if you come from the Chinese language and have learned other languages, either perspective is greatly, actually both perspectives are greatly appreciated on this channel. Let's have a conversation. Let's tape that sucker and let's get it into this podcast. Contact me and let's etch out the details on how to get you and your valuable language learning experience onto this podcast. All of my information is in the show notes. Also, all over social media except Facebook, I am Steph Fuccio, STEPHFUCCIO. That includes Gmail for my email, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and LinkedIn. So I look forward to hearing from you.
I definitely agree that typing is, to like a native speaker, is really useful for practicing the grammar points. And that's probably where, like, you're gonna, without realizing it, practice like 50 times saying this thing, and then you just know it, and learning feels effortless. But what would you do if you were me? And in Chinese, the rate of my learning has slowed down a lot, and it's not because things are particularly hard, because it's because there isn't really difficulty at this point. It's simply
you've gotten to such a high level that.
Well, the problem I have is all the things I learn now can't really be used in like daily life context so easily. Or for example, if it's like a particular grammar point or a certain phrase or something, it's just going to be very unnatural to just drop that in all the time. So I was just trying to think of one. I was thinking of like zila, you know, like an adjective plus zila. So you could be like, "Heng hao, he bie hao, hao zila."
Ah, I see.
Yeah,
what
sorry.
Does that mean?
It's just like extremely,
okay.
And then extremely good,
yeah.
Instead of he bie, like especially good.
Yeah.
And, very
good. Yeah.
So like, because it's such a, it's natural that first you learn like hen hao,
yeah.
Like that's very normal to learn, and you can use that all the time.
Yeah.
And then he bie is like a little more advanced than hen, because it's the degree, you use it less often,
mm-hmm.
but you do still use it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Same with like fei chang, you use it all the time. But then like, I don't hear people saying zila that much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it written so much. I do see it written, but like not nowhere near as often. And so I don't think to use it, or like when I think, oh, I can use it here,
mm-hmm.
I kind of think, is this going to sound a bit like exaggerated? Like it's not really like how to use it. It's just like, really, it's just like, huh. But like, there's this conflict of like, do
mm-hmm.
I want to sound like a normal person, or do I want to actually practice grammar points? So what would you suggest in
mm-hmm.
that sense for like all these different things that are not so common, but you still want to practice them when communicating?
I'd say force yourself to speak to the local people whenever possible, because I think the environment really matters. Since now you're in China, you can maybe in the okay, it's not a good idea. I was thinking maybe going in the subway and then just grab somebody and talk to, but maybe on campus, and also some language exchange events. Is it easy for you to find any Chinese language partner on those language exchange events?
It's really easy to find language partners, I think. Shanghai is a bit different because I work full-time and it's a very big city, so I can find someone, but they've been at different ends of the city, so to go and meet, we've met in the middle, to be fair, and I finish work at 6:30, I meet the person at 7:30, we do like an hour of English, an hour of Chinese. So the one problem is like, it's very tiring, and the second thing is, it's a lot of effort to just get 1 hour of Chinese in, because 1 hour of Chinese is not going to help me now. There were times when after 1 hour of speaking Chinese, I would feel really tired, but I felt really good because I got to really try to like work out my brain. Now I feel like an hour into it, I'm really getting into my real level. You know, it's almost like the warm-up takes that long to switch now. So there's that. But then also, like, even though you like speak to a lot of native speakers, again, this thing of like all these things I'm trying to learn now that are slipping from my memory really easily, they're not commonly used by native speakers.
The English teacher wants to come in.
Yes. How do I use those?
I don't have an answer for you. I have a story. So when I taught English in a number of different countries, not just in China, there were various textbooks that did a similar breakdown of what grammar they would teach at what level. At elementary, you taught present simple. At elementary level, you would teach present simple, you'd teach present continuous, usually in that order. And then when we got up to like intermediate level, we'd teach present perfect. And then when you got really advanced, we teach really, really not often used, not commonly used grammar. And inevitably what would happen is that when people got to the intermediate level, especially in places where it wasn't that common for people to be very fluent in English, when they got to the intermediate level and they started to learn these grammar points, like present perfect, which we use, but we don't use as much as people wanted to practice. So what happened is, after that class, when we'd use present perfect, and I try to draw timelines and give context of when you would use it. Now, what have you ever been to a Zara store? Headway Intermediate, for all the English teachers listening, if there are any. Sorry, there was a whole chapter of have you ever been to a Zara store? And the students would want to answer in present perfect for the entire conversation. But you wouldn't. You'd say, I have, and then you'd go into present past simple, and you'd say, I went there when I was 20, or I went there last week. But they wanted to stay in present perfect because they wanted to practice the lesser used grammar points the whole way through the lesson, but it's not natural. It's not how people speak. So I don't have a solution to your problem, Phil.
One solution would be
if it's not used that much, do you need a lot of practice using it? I guess is more of the question.
Yes, because it's not really, it doesn't matter how often it's used or not. That doesn't change how many iterations I need to practice for it to stay in my memory. Let's say it's like 20.
That's true.
And it's the same, 20 times to learn something like Mayo, which is used all the time. So you're going to, you know, or something like Zilo, you know. So the times when those two things are going to come up naturally in a conversation, obviously, Mayo I learn in a day, you know, and Zilo it can take like months, and it's annoying because I'll hear it two or three times, I'll use it one time in a week, and that's three times, and then it's not used for 3 weeks, and then it's kind of slipped from my memory, and it's this. I feel like there's this common, there's this often thing of like there is not a concentrated week, say, where I'm always using it, and I could obviously just speak a bit weird Chinese and do this. The problem with that is that after that week, if I don't use it for like 6 months, it's still going to just go.
Yeah.
Like, so how, like being able to, and that's just one point.
It sounds like a time-space repetition kind of moment where you need to consciously bring it into your life, whether it happens in conversation or not.
Yeah, but the crux of it is that for it to just naturally occur, like come into my memory and just be like, oh, I'll use this.
Oh, no. I mean, you consciously studying those things those 20 times until it happens. But that's studying, not just using, and you're at the point where you're just using the language, so that probably feels awkward.
It feels awkward, and it definitely feels slowed down because it's 20 times for one point.
Right,
and there's a few hundred things
that I'm trying to remember.
Ah,
is there anything in English that you find is the same? Like, you know it, but you keep forgetting it because you can't, you don't use it a lot?
Yeah, that happens a lot. Yeah. Since recently I've been preparing for the GRE test.
Yeah.
And those words, I don't use them often at all. So, of course, if I pass the test, I would just forget all those words, probably.
What test is it?
GRE.
Oh.
The graduate test for American universities, yeah. The English language vocabulary on there is insane. The vast majority of it is really not unusable, very, very rare, even in academic English.
I've seen TOEFL. TOEFL vocabulary.
No, this isn't for language learners. This is just the graduate test.
I know, it's just like saying that reminded me of the time when I saw a TOEFL vocabulary list, and I was like, half the words I didn't know.
I still want to get back to the question you just raised, though. Is the crux of your concern is that you kind of worry about how you will perform when you use those words you want to use? Is it just about that you are kind of worried about your performance?
It's not that. It's having a beginner and intermediate stage, having learned something and then thinking like, oh, this is really cool, this is really useful, I'll use this now, is great. Being at the advanced stage and being told all these things, or find it, or reading a book, or like now I just read like books and magazines in Chinese. So like every article I read, there'll be like a few things, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. I was reading a finance magazine the other day, and I can't even remember what it is now that I read, but it was cool. It was like dividend, the word in Zhengquan. I can't remember what it is.
Zhengquan.
It's like it's like the payout for, I think it's that. I think it's Zhengquan, but something like that. I'm not going to use that word. So I know that now it's kind of on the edge. I've almost forgotten it.
Mm.
And in a few days, it's probably gone. So it's, and imagine that, but for 1,000 or 2,000 words.
Right.
And grammar points and all this kind of stuff. So this is all the stuff that when it's in my active vocabulary, my Chinese is going to be great. I can talk about finance, I can talk about AI, whatever. But because they're not common terms, unless I was specifically trying to find someone to talk about finance or something. It's
maybe establish that kind of environment for yourself. Read as many books like that as possible.
That's true. So like stick to one topic.
Yes.
I think podcast that should be in that specific area.
There was an amazing podcast
of
a guy who, he actually tries to help, you'd probably be interested in this. He tries to help people learn English, finance, English, like style English.
Whoa.
Because he reads The Economist, an article in The Economist,
yeah,
and he goes through it in Chinese, and then he goes, says it in English,
whoa,
and he goes through and he translates all the key like finance words.
Wow.
And I love it because it's reverse engineering for me.
Right.
Like I hear it all in Chinese, and then I hear it in English and I hear the key terms.
Whoa.
So that's really great for me, actually. So yeah, listen to that, and then mix with just finance things for a month, maybe is
also use those words to maybe write a line, maybe some phrase on italki. Like I can create a dialogue or a discussion, and then people are just gonna follow up with a lot of comments, and then you can reply to those comments using those words you just learned.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
That's a really good point. Like creating that community to use that language.
Also, maybe you can try to use Chinese to explain certain questions to other people. You can just say, okay, I want to help you with your English. And then you can just talk with him or her using Chinese all the time. And I mean, it's not like something you're trying to take advantage of. It's more like, okay, using Chinese, it can actually help him or her understand the things I want to express better. And that way you get to practice this language as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should just teach English, but I'm going to be like, okay.
There you go. Teach very low-level learners and you'll have to use a lot of Chinese.
Yeah.
There you go.
Because often, like, you have the Chinese teacher and you have the foreign teacher, right? And the Chinese teacher is just doing that.
No, you could be both of those, exactly. Oh, you could charge double.
Yeah. I don't think they get paid the same, so I don't think it's double.
No, it'd be like when, yeah. But yeah, no, that's a really good point. Or forums, or I don't know the Chinese equivalent, but there's a lot of websites like Quora, Q-U-O-R-A, which are very topic-based, and people ask questions, and then they'll answer and stuff, and they're talking about that category.
Yeah, they really answer questions seriously.
Yeah, so is there a Chinese equivalent to that kind of...
Yeah, Zhihu.
Okay. Yeah. So, do you know that?
I hope I'm not advertising for them.
No. Oh, no. We have no funding. Don't.
Okay.
We're fine.
Yeah, I use Zhihu quite a lot. Yeah. It's useful. So I do that. I actually do the reverse quite often. Like, if I need to find something, or if I need to, like, see a Chinese word.
Yeah.
If I'm actually on a laptop, as opposed to just at home on my phone, I'll use Zhihu. Because I'll, like, get the explanation in Chinese, and then that's always seen. In fact, for any language, like, using the dictionary in the target language is, like, super cool.
I've heard that. I look forward to that level. To be fair, though, language erosion is a real thing. Yeah. It's not just for your additional languages. It happens in our own language too. When we don't use, I mean, you can grow up talking about something, and if you don't talk about it for years and years and years, you go, what's that again? You know, you've had those moments probably in Chinese too, where you forget a word for something, or a category of something, or the name of a TV show or a person or something. If you don't use language, it like a muscle kind of deteriorates, but you can keep it by doing little workouts. That's really
I'm probably
analogy.
Answering my own question, but it requires motivation. But the other thing I just thought of is I should really start like a blog that's purely Chinese, and then write about what I've read this week.
Would you do it in two languages or just in Chinese?
I guess just in Chinese. I guess just in Chinese, because I'd be doing it for me. I wouldn't be doing it for an audience.
Right.
Also, you can just write, WeChat moments every day. And if you have a lot of WeChat friends, people are just going to comment on. And I have a few friends who have been learning Chinese, and they do this frequently. Yeah. Like, there's this guy from Germany, and wow, he's amazing. He's been just reading a lot of Chinese books, though they are kind of childish, but you get to learn the basic Mandarin Chinese, and then he just used the words he learned to create sentences to post something, and he also just obtain the information he gained in daily life, and then he memorized them, and then he put them into his composition.
That's a really good idea. I hate social media, so I would do a blog.
isn't blog kind of a social media thing?
No, because it's like long form. I'd have to spend hours on it. I'd post it out. And the thing is, I wouldn't care about the reaction.
Yeah.
Whereas social media...
Why would it be a blog and not a Word doc?
But how are you going to interact with those other users if you're going to have to...
I don't know if I would care. The reason not a Word doc is because I would like to have it online somewhere so I can just go to it anytime or show people.
Fair enough. Okay, yeah.
But like something like updating moments, it's just...
It's too short for what you're talking about.
It's too short, and also people would naturally comment, and that means I have to spend more time on my phone, and I don't like that.
Okay. Yeah, but the longer form would force you to use the language.
I prefer just sit. I mean, the absolute best would be to write out the whole thing with a pen and paper, and then somehow scan it in, because, like, writing characters is fun, and that gets eroded as well if you're just talking.
I've never seen a blog like that. That would be interesting if you could just take a picture of it and upload it. No, for real.
Like, I guess, yeah.
That would be so cool. I've never seen a blog like that in any language. I've never seen somebody like handwrite and then post that. That would be really cool.
Trademark Philip McKenna.
There you go. But yeah, if that helps you remember more, then that sounds like a good way to go.
Well, I have to take the HSK6 before I graduate.
Oh my god.
The big thing about the HSK6 is that. I hear the reading part is really the most troublesome because I just use the word troublesome. I've been
it dives into literature and poetry, doesn't it? That's what I've heard recently.
Really? Poetry?
Wow. I don't know about poetry. I've just heard that, there are like 100-ish Cheng Yus you need to know.
What's that?
Cheng Yu.
Oh, sorry, idioms.
Oh, okay.
Four character idioms.
Okay.
Which, like... You could have an hour-long debate as to how, like, often idioms are used, really. Some people say they use all the time, some people say no. But certainly, like, they're just things you just have to learn the meaning for these 100.
Sure.
Because they will come up and they'll be tested on.
That's fair, yeah.
But, But reading is my strongest skill, so I'm not so worried about that. The hardest thing is going to be the writing section, because it's so easy. I took exams last year, and they're just like, you get your paper and you write out during my master's course. Mm-hmm. And everyone around me is just writing, because all my classmates are Chinese. And I would get stuck on like a character like Sheng, like Xue Sheng De Sheng, or something like that.
You can just use pinyin.
Oh god, like, I just...
But ah!
I just,
can but, you do that?
I think so. Sometimes when I forget something, I'll just do that.
So they're all, but they're all like...
In a course, and you hand it in like that?
Oh,
No,
because Chinese people really rarely are going to forget how to write, especially like university students won't, because they're just used to writing all these like papers. So I'd sit there and be like, god damn it. And I'd lose like 3 minutes trying to remember the simplest character.
I forget how to spell stuff in English. Do you ever forget how to write a character that you're thinking of?
I do. Sometimes when I look at a character, I don't even know how to pronounce it anymore. Mm. It's like staring at something that is so alien.
I like the idea of handwriting it and taking a picture and putting it on the blog. But this is your creation, so... Yeah. But I think you may have answered your own question.
Yeah.
Well, when you re-listen to it, you can make a note of all of the suggestions and things from there. Let me save this one and then we'll...
Rick is having the motivation.
If you're enjoying this conversation about the Chinese language and would like to participate, if you're studying in the Chinese language or if you come from the Chinese language and have learned other languages, either perspective is greatly, actually both perspectives are greatly appreciated on this channel. Let's have a conversation. Let's tape that sucker and let's get it into this podcast. Contact me and let's etch out the details on how to get you and your valuable language learning experience onto this podcast. All of my information is in the show notes. Also, all over social media except Facebook, I am Steph Fuccio, STEPHFUCCIO. That includes Gmail for my email, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and LinkedIn. So I look forward to hearing from you.
Motivation is absolutely positively the biggest thing ever.
But you can hack motivation by just forming habits.
You can. And trackers. Having a tracking system. For me, having a tracking system and noticing that I did it this many days, this many hours, this many words, that keeps, with numbers,
really?
That keeps me going.
I would never.
For me. Everybody's different.
You know about bullet journals, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
What is that?
It is like keeping a diary, but it's designed to be a diary that helps you be really productive and form habits. So it's kind of an amalgamation of the two. It's a diary, and it's also what Steph was talking about, where you track for like a month. You make a little table, and it's like these on the rows are like different things you want to do, and then each column is a day, and you tick off the days you did it, and the next
it's
where you didn't.
It's very individual. Here are some visuals. People have so many different ways of doing it. There's a lot of color that people use, a lot of charts, a lot of lists, a lot of... I've watched videos on people doing their bullet journals.
This is like a learning method.
Basically, so but like a whole book of different
tracking methods.
Yeah.
That's cool.
For me, it's too confined. I need loose papers because my ideas change too quickly. And so when I see people doing it in a solid book that they keep going in the same book, for a month or 2 months, I get my commitment phobia just goes crazy. And I'm like, I can't do that. I would rip out that page and then the whole book is ruined. And to commit to that color for that thing on that day, I can't, because then the next day I want it to be green instead of pink. And yeah, it works for a lot of people.
Yeah, it doesn't work for me either.
No.
I tried it for a solid 3 weeks and I was just like,
because
it feels like more admin work than just to do the damn things.
I do the organization, but I do it on loose paper, and then I put them together very non-committally, with like a binder clip.
The binder clip.
They're together, but they're not committed. Now it's in the other room. But they're not committed to being in the same book for the whole time. Like, I can't do that very well. Yeah, things change too much, too often. What do you guys do to keep yourselves motivated in learning languages? We haven't even gone past English. What other languages have you dabbled in?
Espanol, Deutsch, and a little bit of Portuguese. Actually, all of the languages I mentioned, I just know a little bit about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Probably a little bit more about German.
Yeah. What did you find the hardest going from... At that point, you had Chinese and English, and then German in that order?
Yeah.
Okay. So what was the hardest part to go into German from those two languages?
I wouldn't say phonetics. Phonetics, really a lot of fun. Grammar.
Okay.
Yeah. Grammar is not something... Okay, I really hate about those things about Ganu's accusative, dative, and such, you know, grammatical terminologies, mm-hmm. and you're going to have to learn how to apply them into your daily usage. I don't have that much time for that. It's not like primary school. I can just practice them every day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now in college, so I have a lot of schoolwork. So I cannot, you know, stick to my plan.
Mm-hmm.
And once you cannot stick to your plan, you're just going to feel quite disappointed. Yeah.
So how... Going back to motivation, how do you guys keep motivated? What do you do to keep going forward with your languages?
I may answer this question first. Okay.
Go for it.
Sure. How I keep myself motivated. Okay, so whenever I talk with foreigners, I just feel really excited and happy because I feel like I'm, you know, communicating with people from another culture. Because I think it's relevant. It's related to my childhood. I'm from a really small town, so we don't get to see a lot of foreigners there. So I really wanted to see what's outside, and that is one of the reasons why I chose to come to Shanghai to study.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm here, and I met so many people, and I feel like, wow, this is amazing. I want to explore what's outside of this country. So that's why I decided to go abroad to study.
Sorry, where are you from? What town?
You mean province, city?
City, then province.
Sure. Hanzhong, Shaanxi, China.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And, well, that's close to Xi'an, by the way. Xi'an. Xi'an, where the terracotta warriors are.
Yeah. Shaanxi province. Yeah.
And,
Amazing food. Rojam or...
Yeah.
Really like that? Okay. I just think it's too greasy. And whenever I think about my friends, because I have friends from different countries,
mm-hmm.
I just picture the moment when I can sit around the table with them,
mm-hmm.
Maybe dining together, and I will definitely make that happen someday. And I also want to travel to their hometown to meet them,
mm-hmm.
in person.
Mm-hmm.
And I also did couch surfing for the first time ever last winter,
mm-hmm.
so that was quite exciting. So I want to keep going with that in the future to explore other cultures. So during the whole experience, languages function as tools for me to get to know other people,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, explore different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So the more languages I know, I feel like I'm armed better with more knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And that fulfills my goal of becoming more cosmopolitan.
What keeps you going?
The thing that keeps me motivated,
yeah.
The biggest thing has been to depersonalize it.
Wow, that is completely opposite.
Yeah.
And this is what I love about language learning, is that it's so different.
So, like,
this is
for Chinese, but it's for, like, everything.
Yeah.
So, like, I wake up before I go to work,
mm-hmm.
I code for 2 hours in the morning, then I work, then I go home and I work out, then I do yoga, then I study Chinese. And the way I've built up, like, each thing,
mm.
is, I tried a lot of different methods, and I was just trying for a long time to be more productive in the day,
mm.
and I'm really happy where I've got to now, but I did it by, the biggest revelation was that it's not, like, motivation is not something I have, it's something that just happens if I follow a series of steps, basically. And
mm-hmm.
If I didn't follow these certain steps, which I know what they are now, I would stop doing those things,
mm-hmm.
and I would go back to watching YouTube or just whatever. And if anyone else followed those steps,
mm-hmm.
they would get the same result. So
mm-hmm.
completely taking the whole idea of motivation,
mm-hmm.
and realizing that it's not anything specific to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I have. It's something that... It, like, exists in my life because I follow certain steps. That's it. And it's, like, that determines how, quote-unquote, motivated I would be.
Right.
So yeah, that's really it.
I am smack dab in the middle of both of you. My motivation is to read, to get into people's thoughts after they've refined them. So it's kind of the communicative thing, but after everything's all cleaned up and super organized. But I need steps to get me there, because to read at that level in another language takes a really, especially with the Hunza characters, takes a really, really, really long time. So I need mini steps to get me there, like 2 or 3 years from now.
And that's not something I'm good at. I'm not good at, mm-hmm. you know, keeping with the paces.
Well, you've got that motivation to communicate with people, and people are everywhere.
So yeah.
It feels like on this side of the fence, it feels easier to have your motivation than mine, but the grass is always greener. Coming from English to Chinese, what was the hardest bit for you? And I think we talked about this in a previous interview, but
yeah,
just for fun.
I don't know if I said the same thing. Like,
okay.
They're not been really difficult. Like, I don't, again, like, with difficulty, it's a similar sort of thing of, like, I used to think that, like, in terms of hard and difficult, mm-hmm. hard and easy and things, and now that I'm actually doing the things I always wanted to do, mm. part of getting to this stage was realizing that, like, easy and difficult, like, they're, it's going to sound very cliche, but they're just labels. Like, they, mm. but what I mean is they're very, like, they're very shallow labels. They don't really mean mm. anything. Like, the best definition of difficult I find is, like, something that's, that people call difficult would require many steps before achieving it, mm-hmm. and something that's easy requires very few steps, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, for you, reading a Chinese book would be very difficult because you would have to go through, like, all this, like, learn all this vocabulary, mm-hmm. that would require all these steps, and reading one sentence would be easier because maybe there's several words you don't know, but you just have to learn several words.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's just a matter of scope, right? So, like, if you would, like, read a book and then just zoom in a little to mm-hmm. see every step and then go down into one of those steps, mm-hmm. there comes a point where this difficult task is just a bunch of easy tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be really easy tasks. It depends, like, how, like, on your scope and how, like, deep you want to go and how much you want to zoom in. Because mm-hmm. ultimately, like, reading an it's, mm-hmm. again, going to sound like a cliche, mm-hmm. but, like, reading an entire book in Chinese, if you zoom down to the lowest level, is, I guess, learning one character at a time, and how easy or is it to learn, like, one character? It might take a beginner 15, 20 minutes, mm. or, like, 2 days, like, 20 minutes one day, refresher the next day for 10 minutes. But 2 days, 30 minutes, there they've got that character.
Okay.
And it's basically just going from that. So, wait, what was the question?
What was the hardest thing?
All right, sorry.
Going from English to Chinese, what was the hardest thing for you? It sounds like, from what you said before, it might have been the ability to use the less commonly used stuff might be the hardest thing.
The hardest thing, yes, that's the problem I'm having now.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, like, what would have made it easier?
Mm-hmm.
This goes back to, like, what would my perfect learning environment be?
Mm-hmm.
Like, having someone around me always to correct me,
mm-hmm.
And to, you know, chat with whenever I wanted
about
a range of topics.
Yeah.
So that was the hardest thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's not specific, like, English or Chinese,
mm-hmm.
because if I learn another language, I'd like the same thing. But that's not,
that's,
you know,
true. Yeah.
That's not an inherently difficult part of the language.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, like, the thing that was, that took the most time was finding people. That's an environmental factor. So if you can fix that, you're going to learn really quickly, I think.
Well, that is a big factor in language learning, is finding the right teachers, whether they be one-on-one or classroom or online or what have you. Finding that right connection to learn.
That's
the way
true.
You need to is a big factor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going from Chinese to English, do you remember, because it was quite a long time ago, or even where you are now with the language, other than the GRE? Because that stuff is great.
Can you give me a few specific points to talk about?
For me, because I'm concerned with reading and writing in Chinese, the lack of spaces between words is monumental. It's been over a year, and I still curse every time I don't recognize something because I don't know how to look it up, because I don't know if it's 1, 2, or 3, or even 4 characters in one word.
Can I just put in and say, like,
yeah.
You definitely get to a point where you master that. So
That's very awesome. But for me, at this point, that is by far the biggest thing, coming from English where there is spaces between words to Chinese where there isn't. That's still, I can't wait to get past it.
Actually, they become in similar sizes.
What's that?
You mean the Chinese characters, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to separate them apart.
Yes.
But they come in, you know, similar sizes.
The characters do, but the words don't. Like, you have one line mm-hmm. with four or five words and no spaces.
Okay.
Because a word can be one character, two characters, three characters, maybe yeah. even four. Are there more than four? At HSK3, then, we haven't
done are you talking about radical?
No.
What? Characters. Character is just like a ren and then two strokes forming a character, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the two strokes are radical.
Mm-hmm.
No. No. Actually, there's only one radical.
Not at the stroke level, which means at like the word level. So like some...
So zai, gen zai. Zai is its own word, or can be, right? My tones are completely awful.
Wait, where are you talking about again?
Zai.
Zai.
Like, I am here, zai.
Okay.
But, I still remember you saying to go deep down in my throat when I say wo, because I can't say it. Or zai. Zai can be its own word, right? But then jian zai.
A word word?
Hmm?
A word word? A what word?
A word.
No, there is one word in between you just said.
I.
Oh.
I am here, yeah.
Okay.
So wo zai. Can you say it correctly?
What's that?
That.
Oh, that's correct.
It can be, yeah, so I, whatever, am here, whatever. That's one word. Zai is one word, right?
Yes.
But then zhen zai, is that the same zai?
Xian zai.
Yeah, xian zai.
Yes.
Is a word, but it has zai in it.
Yeah. Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
So, but there wouldn't be, so if you see zai, it could be its own word, or it could be connected to the things around it, and without spaces... It's a big block for me coming from English where there are spaces between words.
Punctuation.
At the end of the sentence.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's...
But this is me coming from English to Chinese. Okay. Do you remember anything when you started learning English, or even now when you're reading or speaking, that you're constantly going, oh, I did that again? Like that you're struggling with at all?
Okay, so... Before, I don't really think I had any trouble learning English because I mostly just really enjoy it. But right now, since I'm, you know, getting to know or say getting used to those academic materials, they can be a little bit troublesome sometimes. The sentences are quite complexly structured, and you need to read one sentence over and over again. And that's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you cannot even understand what it means, even if you read it multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Is
it the vocabulary in the sentence, or how the sentence is formed, or that it's so stinking long with 20 commas, or...?
I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
That the longer it gets, you tend to forget what was said previously.
Mm-hmm.
And it's harder to form the intact idea of the whole sentence.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Chinese sentences tend to come into pieces, but English sentences...
What does that mean?
Like, I can give you an example.
Mm.
No, I can't, actually. I'm bad.
Are they usually shorter?
Example. Yes, that's what I meant.
Okay.
I'm feeling so good about this because I'm having the exact same problem in Chinese, so it's really nice to hear, like... Because for me, obviously, like, reading English, I'm like... I know it can be done, I know you can read everything in English, and it just makes sense.
Yeah.
So hearing someone who's not quite there... But on the way, really gives me hope for my Chinese, because I know, like, for you it's the same, like, reading Chinese, it is possible to get to a level of Chinese where it's like, everything just makes sense, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone learning Chinese has the same problem that you just mentioned. So how it comes across in Chinese is you can read, every character in the sentence, you know what every character means, but you don't know what their sentence means. It's the same sort of thing.
Mm.
Really?
Is the causal factor the same as mine?
I'd say with... So it's a slightly different, because I'd say with yours, it's more like... Chinese grammar's a bit simpler, maybe, and maybe, like, how things... I have seen some weird, like, completely correct, but strange, like, English sentences, which I would listen to or read, and I think that just makes sense.
Yeah.
But then a student would ask, but why isn't it this? And they would have this different interpretation of the sentence that I would just never think of. But I'm like, but when it comes to, like, why is it my interpretation and not theirs, it's really difficult sometimes to know why. Because I'm like, yeah, you could read it like that. It still kind of does, there is a logic there. So I think in English, like, because of the grammar structures maybe in just certain sentences, there's maybe two or three kinds of logic you could take and get two or three different interpretations. And for someone learning English, even at a high level, it's like hard to know which one exactly they mean, like who's the subject or something like that. Whereas in Chinese, the problem is you know all the characters, but two characters together form this word you've not seen before, or like these four characters are Chengyu, or something like that, or like this is the name of a company or something like that. So you read it and you're like, I don't know what's going on, and then you find out the end four characters are Chengyu and a Chinese idiom, and three characters are like a company
so
name.
So it's more vocabulary than length of the sentence.
Yeah, if you recognized, usually, I'd say 90% of the time, and then there's 10% of the time where it's like you actually know every. You could translate the thing into English. Okay, so yeah, this happened like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
I could translate the whole thing into English, not a problem.
Yeah.
But I was like, what are they actually saying?
Yeah.
And it was like, if you order a rice, it was on Elamai, I was ordering takeout. If you order a rice, no, if you order like a meal, you can only order a maximum of two rice. I read it, but like, I just didn't think that that's what they would mean, because it seems like a weird thing.
Yeah.
And so I asked my colleague, who's Chinese, and he was like, he said that. And I was like, oh, and as soon as he said it, I was like, oh, of course, that's exactly what that says.
What was it in Chinese? Do you remember what it said?
Dian. Something like, Dian yi ge cai, zhe neng dian liang fen, dian yi fen cai, zhe neng dian liang fen fan. Something like that.
Okay.
But the thing is, what I'm doing is I'm not telling you exactly what it was.
Yeah.
I'm definitely trying, like, in my head, coming up with something that makes sense in the way my level of Chinese.
Right.
What they said was, like, all the same characters,
mm-hmm.
just a slightly different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, like, threw me, because I was like, I just...
Wait, by way, you mean the way they pronounce them? Like, the stress and the tones?
No, because this was text. It was text, I could read every character, they were all using the same characters I just used.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, like, in that moment...
Mm-hmm.
My brain couldn't quite get to, like, that's what they mean. I guess because I just didn't expect that that's what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
Have you encountered the similar word in before?
No, so maybe that's the thing.
I think that's the factor. Okay, I'm going to raise an example question to you to see if you understand it. Okay. 你试一下不就知道, wait, here it is. 你去一次不就知道它是不是真的了吗?
That's really interesting. So if I was to translate that, even though that's all like simple characters, say it once more.
你去一次不就知道它是不是真的了吗?
Like something like, you went once, didn't you know they, like he or she was real?
Uh-huh. And what if you try to make it more perfect and you interpret it into English? What does it mean to you?
Oh, like... So the overall scenario I would have would be something like you met someone on like a hookup app and you were going to meet them and then they weren't like and then they weren't real and then you came home and then your friend said to you like, oh no, you've been to meet them, like, so, I don't know, like it would be something like they were lying about their appearance or something.
Uh-huh.
Like, in what way are they like real? So like
wow, those two meetings are super different.
Yeah, I don't know, something like, you went and met them, you've already been to meet them, didn't you know they were real? I don't know.
What does it...
Actually, it's a way of asking in reply.
What?
Asking in reply. It's like you don't have to answer the question.
Mm.
I already stated what I meant, I already implied what I meant. So you notice that there's this word, 不就, right, in their sentence, right? So this sentence is actually equal to, 你去试一次就知道... 它是不是真的了? Does that make sense to you right now?
Right, so that makes way more sense. If you go and try, you'll know whether or not they're real.
Yes, so I think it's about some idiom usage.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, that's going to be less common, so that's why I know the second wording more than the first wording.
Right.
It comes up less. So then I really should learn that, but then like trying to use it, but like, the amount of times I'm going to see it in a month or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, language is so complex. It's amazing sometimes that communication happens
I really want to find the example now.
Yeah.
I'm going to think of a really random example, but you see an advert on, like, I don't know, an app.
Maybe
like,
maybe let me replace the first verb with a more, with a better one. 是, 你试一次不就知道它是个真的吗?
Right, so I'm selling you this phone and it's only 5,000 kuai, and you're like, 是真的吗? You're like, or 500 kuai, 500 kuai, and you're like, 是真的,你试一次就不知道.
Actually, it's not about selling something. Maybe like...
Just try though, right?
Yeah.
So
just,
like... So
just try to see if the thing is really as it's stated.
Yeah, so if I was like selling you a phone, I was trying to sell you a phone, it's like 500块. You'd be like 500块, 肯定是假的. And then the sales guy could say, 你就试一次. No, 你试一次不就知道. 不就知道. That's really weird. 不就知道. 是真的.
不就知道.
Oh, it's weird because like, the thing is with 不.
Why weird?
Because 不 has got such a, like, it's so stuck in my head. It's like so freaking like, it's got such a thing that is like.
Wait, where does that come from?
The way you learn Chinese. So like HSK1, like the very beginning, you learn 不 is like no or not or negative, same as 没, 没有. So when you're now using it in a way that
there's
doesn't
no negative spin.
Yeah, that doesn't have a negative spin. Yeah. It's like really hard to pull to like not hear the 不 and be like, okay. The next thing is going to be like negated, basically. So that's the thing. It's, and I think that's the main thing. It's like the thing that will trip someone up, like me or like anyone learning Chinese, is these thing words that you learn really early, really common words, and they definitely mean this one thing, and they just mean this like one thing or like not, you know, something really common. And then you get advanced and you're like, oh, that bull, yeah, yeah, it can also be used here, and it doesn't mean that thing. That's the trick.
It's actually a question raised by my friend today, and I try to explain to him that way. Yeah, it's a bit tricky.
I'm definitely going to save this on my phone. Oh, I can order for the next 3 minutes from this place, but I don't want to. I really hope I don't click order. I have to pay anyway, so I won't. But I just wanted to see. If, right, 请. 请 just means like dear. 一份菜只限点两份. Yeah, it doesn't say mi fan, but it's like for the mi fan, so it's not,
okay.
You know. 两份. Oh, okay.
Where are you pointing to?
Sorry, so it's the mi fan. It's got this like long
okay,
name,
yeah.
Right? It's not a name.
Okay,
it's
yeah.
Just saying like, so it's saying like if you order for every if you order a vegetable dish, you
can
only order two rice. But I guess because it doesn't include the word, I don't know. There's something about...
It's something omitted.
Right.
Let me check it out. 一份菜只限点两份米饭.
I think it was the 只限点. Was like... Like, I expected like 只可以.
Yeah, I think that's more natural. 只能点两份米饭.
Oh.
I think it's ill-structured.
Right. Okay, yeah. But it's still like...
Okay.
I mean, it's still okay Chinese, right?
Well, because most of the words are correct.
Yeah.
That one shouldn't be here, I think.
Yeah, so I don't know. Is it my Chinese or is it their Chinese? Like,
right.
That's what, like, but yeah, so that really, all those characters are super simple. I can
right.
I can tell you, like,
right.
Words for all of them. It's so it was...
It can be said this way. 一份菜限点两份饭, or 一份菜只能点两份饭.
Both of those, I can totally understand.
Right.
Yeah.
So is it, were they restricted to a certain amount of characters for that app or something? Or was there some sort of constraint where they couldn't write all of that, maybe?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
They just
want
extra
yeah. character.
Yeah.
Oh, oh it's more characters than any...
Yeah.
They use,
huh.
It's just where they use xian. Xian is like xian zhi. It's like
yeah.
To control.
I think it's about there being lack of knowledge about the right usage of Chinese sometimes.
Mistakes happen.
Yeah.
Just because you're a native speaker doesn't mean you're perfect in the
That's
language.
True.
So just so we're clear, my Chinese is fine, and the Chinese person wrote bad Chinese, and that's where I got confused.
But it can happen to anyone, anytime. The number of errors I've seen. Yeah, anyway. Blah, 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 blah. Are you?
Sure.
You should be, yeah.
Well,
you're
well,
like, I was confused because it's confusing.
I was, because it's not a hard thing. I was like, wow, when I got told what it was, I was like,
maybe the guy is just too lazy to correct it.
And, sorry, what was the grammar point? 不就是, right?
不就是, 对, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Now, the trick is, you have to let them know that that's wrong. You have to, like, send them a message on WeChat.
They're going to get some lawai, smart-ass lawai. Be like, excuse me.
Do you not have a Chinese name on your WeChat yet?
I do.
Well, then he won't know.
I also have, like, a foreign face and a name Phil.
Okay, that's, yeah.
And also, like, it's a very, like, even for a Chinese person to do it, it's very arsey, I think.
Yeah?
Like,
but if it's causing confusion, yeah, I don't know. Anyway. Final thoughts on anything we've talked about?
Something about reading. So, I'm not a good reader. I never enjoyed reading books, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, I want to know... I especially have this problem when I read some passages that just cannot go on naturally. I tend to go back to previous things very often, even if I'm reading Chinese. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe I have dyslexia?
For me, I write all over what I'm reading, if I can. If it's on a paper form, I'll write questions, I'll circle things, I'll underline things, I'll highlight a specific word here and there to keep me focused. The more boring something is, the more I've written on it. Oh, actually, the more boring something is and the more exciting something is, I'll have writing stuff in between. I'll just read and not remember. But yeah, I try to interact with it. And that might work for you since you're very communicative verbally. Maybe viewing the text as somebody to talk to. Do you know what I mean? Like asking it questions. When you hit a point and you're like, that was confusing. Like write a question above it or something.
Yeah, I would do that.
Yeah.
I think for reading, there's two different moods or two different modes you will like be in if you're anything like me, which is kind of... what would the word be? Like, sometimes I read broadly, sometimes I read deeply, and the difference is that if I read broadly, and I'm in the mood where I just, like, want to read an article or something, so I just read it, and I have, like, a pen or a paper, and I always like to do this, I always like to buy magazines because they're cheap and they're paper, so I can write on them and stuff, and when I come across a word I don't know, or something that was confusing or, like, interesting, I'll just underline it. But that's all I'll do. I won't do anything else, and I'll just keep reading. Because I'm reading just to, like, read more. I just want to read the whole thing.
But that's not going to help you build your vocabulary.
Right. Yeah. So, maybe on a different day, maybe after that, or maybe on a different day, when I'm in the right mood to go deep, I go back to the thing, and I don't really read the passage again at all. I ignore the passage. I just, like, look at the underlined things. Mm-hmm. And then I, like, add them to a word list or write the translation or something like that. Like, I'm focusing just on these, like, words that I've, like, seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very, very rarely, if ever, like, in both moods. Because before I would do that, I would go through a passage slowly by, like, underline a word and then, like, write what it means or write something or write it in my notebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got frustrated because I wasn't doing either of the two things I would want to do. Like neither was satisfied because oftentimes it was more I wanted to just read broadly and I'm like, God, like I need to underline like two words every sentence, so I'm like not, my speed's really slow.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that out later on, like I can read the whole article in 30 minutes and
mm-hmm.
enjoy it and keep with it, and then later on like I do have a time when I'm like I like it's almost like sometimes I feel like one's less mental efforts,
mm-hmm.
other times I feel like the other's
mm-hmm.
less mental
mm-hmm.
Did it happen to you when you initially entered college? I mean, in college, I bet there are a lot of words you didn't understand English as well, right?
Ooh,
no? Okay.
Are you really going to say no? What did you study at university?
I'm going to say that...
Because I know in American universities, students are asked to do intensive reading every week, like hundreds of pages of material.
Depends
right?
on your discipline.
This is perfect. You've set me up perfectly. I'm going to say that British universities, in general, are much easier than American universities.
Okay.
In general.
But you guys dive in deeper into your subject sooner.
Yes. But that doesn't matter.
Oh.
I mean, I never in a single week read a book, say, and I hear that like a lot of even standard courses you would sometimes read a book or two or something like that.
Tons of reading every week in every subject.
Nope.
Yeah, but how you read them would vary depending on the subject, the task, how many other things you had to do in your classes, and how fast you read as a person in general, and how much you liked it. So there were a lot of things to consider before you did that specific reading for that class. Did you grow up reading for pleasure?
For pleasure, pure pleasure.
Look at the look in his face.
No. I just told you I'm not a good reader. I don't know why. I just don't really have that much interest in reading.
I'm an awful reader.
I love
I'm
reading
an
now.
Awful, awful, slow, easily confused. I'm slightly dyslexic, but I love the worlds in the books that I read.
I have the kind of feeling, but it's hard. It's quite hard for you to, you know, jump into one book you're not familiar with.
Yeah, but after the first few chapters, it gets easier.
Now I'm reading. I'm actually kind of getting bored of it, but I'm reading Santi, which is like a sci-fi novel.
Okay.
And it's 3 books long.
You're reading it in Chinese, right?
Yeah.
Ever since the internet came, I'm reading in book form a lot less and listening to a lot more content.
The reason I brought this up was to go back to like British university education.
Yeah, that's
way
right.
easier.
Yeah.
Way easier. Because I mean.
We read entire books every single year in high school and wrote essays for our tests and term papers. I went to a very weird high school.
I think GRE is just designed for you guys.
This could explain my score.
If I could whistle, then I would whistle rather after though.
You can't whistle? Oh my god, we're learning so much about you right now. Do you think there is one language learning method that works for everybody, or do you think that it is very individualistic?
Think it's more like a repertoire you can choose from. Like I have a lot of equipment, and you're gonna have to pick the specific ones suitable for you. Like for me, I prefer speaking more, so I combine internet with my English learning more. And if you prefer reading, then probably more books in the library.
I think it depends on your goal.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if you want to learn to speak, then the thing I mentioned before of having like a native speaker always around who is paid or somehow coerced into like constantly helping you, giving you all the attention you want, you're gonna be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the environment more than anything else, I think, is the thing. It's not like something you do.
The environment more than the method.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between the two?
Yes, because the method, for example, could be I'm sure there's a really bad way to, increasing your vocabulary by not applying it, but by simply like trying to memorize a dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I presume, not a good way. You would like learn meanings of words, but you wouldn't see them in context. You wouldn't see any grammar.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a terrible way, really.
Mm-hmm.
If that's a bad way, then there has to be a good way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
But is there one way for everybody?
I think, so this is the thing. If you split it into like reading and you split it into speaking.
Okay.
Speaking, anyone who wants to get good at speaking, I would say would benefit from the environment of having a native speaker who also helps them. Because it doesn't matter like when you make mistakes or if you make more mistakes than the other learner, the point is you are just going to both learn really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
For reading, graded readers, start off with reading something at the beginner level and work your way from there. So English, there's a lot of resources, and also Chinese, there's quite a few like different books you can... There's...
Not until
English.
You hit 3. Not until you hit HSK 3. There's a lot of stuff at 3 and above.
Okay.
Before that, it is really boring or not really graded.
Ah.
Yeah.
I stand corrected.
Yeah. Sorry. But that was a painful thing to learn. But it's also a niche in the market, in case anybody's interested in making materials for Chinese language learners.
If you're enjoying this conversation about the Chinese language and would like to participate, if you're studying in the Chinese language or if you come from the Chinese language and have learned other languages, either perspective is greatly, actually both perspectives are greatly appreciated on this channel. Let's have a conversation. Let's tape that sucker and let's get it into this podcast. Contact me and let's etch out the details on how to get you and your valuable language learning experience onto this podcast. All of my information is in the show notes. Also, all over social media except Facebook, I am Steph Fuccio, STEPHFUCCIO. That includes Gmail for my email, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and LinkedIn. So I look forward to hearing from you.
I think the idea of creating English vocabulary tends to, you guys really tend to group up meanings a lot, like sanfroid or minuscule, such words that you don't use often, but there's this nuance between, they mean different things, but that's also what's beautiful about them. You group up, let's say, A, B, and C, these three elements, mm-hmm. You use them to form one word. Okay, so this time I choose A and B to form the word one, and B, C, the word two, mm-hmm. and next time A, C, word three. So that causes the nuance. And in Chinese, I think we tend to use long sentences and long expressions to express the kind of complex ideas.
Are you saying it's the word order?
Not word order, no. It's like, I'm trying to explain why mm-hmm. there are so many English words. Mm-hmm. I think way more than Chinese characters or Chinese words. Do you think so?
From what I understand... Oh, are you raising your hand?
Yeah.
Let me say one thing before
sure,
you do that.
Yeah.
And we might overlap here. From what I understand, because of the history of the English language, mm-hmm. a large portion of our grammar comes from German and our vocabulary comes from French.
Yeah.
So a lot of English words aren't technically English, but we've taken them and used them. And now we have a lot of other loan words as well.
But so they can mean different things. And that's what matters, I think.
Some can, some can't. It depends on the word. But that's true in Chinese, too.
Really?
There are words that have multiple meanings.
Okay.
Oh, so many. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll step in here. I think in general, it's... What you're saying is, well, you're asking. So I think that generally English does have like more words that are really similar and just have small nuances that are different than Chinese, but Chinese does, and for words that are not in English. So the only example I can think of, I can't actually remember both words, but replace mm-hmm. is one word in English, and it really just, we just use the word replace. But in Chinese, there's, is it zanti or daiti?
Daiti.
And then there is another way.
取代,
right. So mm-hmm. they're both, if you look in a dictionary, they both mean replace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I remember the like nuanced difference, but mm-hmm. it's very bloody nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah.
There is this nuance in between.
Exactly. So what is the difference between those two? They both translate to replace, but what's
right.
the difference?
取代,
yes, 取代,
I think... It's about when you use them.
Yeah, so what's the
difference? I cannot really tell the difference in between, actually.
Okay, I replaced my phone. Which one would you use for that sentence?
I replaced my phone.
代替, I think.
我代替了, no, you cannot replace your... You cannot be used to replace your phone.
No, like, maybe you had a phone and then it got lost, so
yeah.
you needed a replacement phone, so you went to replace your phone.
Okay,
but that's a very English sentence. You wouldn't really say that.
No.
Because
okay.
you're saying replace, what you mean is buy, really, right?
Yeah, I would just say, what
do you replace them?
I know the difference. You guys keep going, because I know the answer. So you guys keep going.
I don't even know these two words in Chinese, so I'm not even a participant in this one. But I'm trying to think of something that we would replace. So you wouldn't replace the car, you wouldn't replace your clothes, you wouldn't replace... What would you replace?
The cane's been replaced by someone else. Cane.
The cane?
Hmm.
Mm. Wait, did you ask the question that you were going
to
answer to?
Well, it's because I thought of it, and I wanted to see if you know the difference, because it's like this example of nuanced Chinese words.
Mm-hmm.
Dai
mm-hmm.
is used to be like, now I've forgotten the English word, but like dai go. Go is to buy, right? So if you're a dai go, you're the person who goes somewhere to Japan, say.
Yeah.
You'll buy something for someone and bring it back for them.
Okay.
You're called a dai go.
Yeah.
So it's like... in place of something else, or in place of someone else.
Okay.
So, daiti means to replace,
uh-huh.
but it means when you, it refers to the result,
mm-hmm.
the difference is the result, so when you replace and you use daiti, it means you're replacing something for something else to act on behalf of the original thing. So, daiti, you would use
yeah.
if, like, you need to go to a meeting, but you can't make it, you're sick, or you're ill, or you can't make it there.
Okay.
So you can say, like, to me, like, can, like, there you would use daiti to replace, because I'm fulfilling your function.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it's something like, we don't have this object, we can use something else. It doesn't have the same function, but it's
mm-hmm.
kind of like the next best option, or it's something, it has like a slight, it's kind of different in some
mm-hmm.
way.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
when you'd use the other one. Chudai would be the other case of the thing you're replacing doesn't necessarily have the same function. Mm-hmm. It's not meant to act the same as the thing that's been replaced. It's just like swapping it out.
See, from an outsider's point of view, what I'm seeing here is that you guys are picking up on interesting parts of the language that you're learning that people who just grew up with it wouldn't notice. And you've both done that with the other language. And that's very, very interesting because I think you're talking about, when you were talking about the word, more words, do you mean like more syllables within a word, more sounds within the language? Or do you mean more words in general?
No, I think what he's talking about is this, just the opposite. So like there's more cases of this in English where you have three English words translated into Chinese, just one Chinese word. So for someone learning English, you're like, what's the difference between these three words? They all mean the same thing in Chinese.
Okay.
And there's these nuanced small differences.
So in English, is it that we use the specific vocabulary? In Chinese, they use something else within the sentence to be that specific?
It's that in English, more often, we have words that pretty much mean the same thing.
Right.
But as native speakers, we just know when to use one instead of the other.
In Chinese, it's the same.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I try to explain why, okay, some people are just going to ask me, why don't you use this word here? I'm like, I don't know. But we just don't use that here.
Okay.
It's just about idiom.
So is that wasn't what you meant with English? More words? Because I thought that's what you were going for.
I think so. I mean, this phenomenon happens in English as well.
I think that's what he was going for with the nuance.
Mm.
Then that made me think, like, because in Chinese, you sometimes can flip it, like we did just then.
Yeah.
But it's kind of less common. There's more like nuanced words, I think, in English.
So what is in, how does the Chinese language deal with that kind of nuance? Does it have anything within the sentence to get that specific meaning?
Context.
Yeah, well, the context, or like I just mentioned, like if there's two words that mean replace.
Yeah.
A native speaker just knows how to use it.
Like, no, but we're talking about within the sentence. What is there? You're saying in English it's the word itself. It could be this word or this word or this word, and we know the differences. But in Chinese, if there's less words to be that specific...
It's the characters, right? So, qu, dai, dai, ti.
Yeah.
They mean replace if you translate them into English.
Yeah.
But the way that you can know the difference if you're learning the language is by... The key is the dai there, what dai actually means.
Mm-hmm.
When you use that dai, it's like...
Maybe something like this. So in English, there's only one word replace, but in Chinese, there are two words. So what causes this amount difference?
But we do have substitute, not to throw a wrench in it, but substitute's basically replace, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or maybe,
yeah,
why, okay, so there's this nuance between 取代 and 代替, and there are some other types of nuance between the synonyms in English.
Right, right, right.
Why are the nuances different?
Oh, it's just because of the ideas.
Mm.
So like...
culture.
Well, all words just...
Oh.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's just all the words, any words in any language, they are trying to express some idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously, two cultures, never, like, not connected for thousands
mm-hmm.
of years, will not have perfectly aligned ideas and concepts they're trying
mm-hmm.
to get across.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why.
Yeah.
Perhaps this is also why it makes it hard sometimes to translate something.
Yeah.
Definitely. Because
sure.
if you don't have the concept for it, how do you put words to it?
Here's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Payful.
Mm-hmm.
Payful.
Yeah.
Payful, like, well, and payful ta is really, like, pretty commonly used. It kind of means, like, well, the translation into English sounds really weird because
mm-hmm.
it's like admire
mm-hmm.
is the best. It's the translation is admire.
Yeah.
And we never say, I really admire him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, to me, I would just translate it that way.
That's the correct translation,
mm-hmm.
but I think someone who's like a professional translator
mm-hmm.
would not use the word admire and would
mm-hmm.
use a much more colloquial, much more like native sounding way.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, like, there's this thing of like, that's definitely like the concept is different. Like, that concept in English is very like protected and very rarely used. Whereas in Chinese,
mm-hmm.
the idea is slightly different and the words just...
HSK3, tai tai is in there. My tones are off again. How it is defined in my vocab list versus how I hear people use it is totally different. How would you explain tai tai?
That's perfect.
Thank you.
That's another perfect. So tai tai just means wife, right?
Does it?
Wait. Here's the thing. We only have the word wife in English.
Yeah.
And in Chinese you have like lao po and tai tai.
Okay, I don't know the...
One is more former.
Yeah, one's more formal, one's less formal.
Okay,
so you don't really say tai tai.
Okay.
Because it just sounds really formal.
Okay.
You say lao po. And so that's a perfect example.
Okay.
One word in English, two words in Chinese.
I've also heard tai tai in multiple contexts, not just one person, with them referring to it. Like, in English we would say, or at least in American English, we'd say like women who lunch. Like a very... Like housewives that have... whose husbands have a very good job, so they go and do like charity events, they go to lunch with their friends, they have a very comfortable financial existence, they might have a driver, they might, you know, they're very comfortable. I've heard tai tai being used as that.
Yeah, more richer?
Yeah, yeah.
Tai tai.
I don't know. Is that...
I think so. Because that word does give me that kind of sense.
It does?
Yeah.
Okay. But that's not what's in my HSK book. And so I saw that, wait a minute, that's one of those instances where it's that nuance. And why isn't that taught? Is it because it's only a certain part of China that's thought of like that? Or a certain economic class when people say that? I don't know.
Probably maybe in some TV series,
mm-hmm.
They tend to use that kind of language a lot. And when they use that kind of language, the appearance of a rich woman appears.
Mm-hmm.
And then you tend to connect these two things together.
Mm-hmm.
That's a suggestion, I don't know.
And how long does it take for that to happen, for that to reach the learning materials and to change the meaning, right?
So,
yeah. I need some statistical work.
I can throw another, like, absolute curveball in here.
Go
it's
for
just
it.
Like, also, like, set phrases
yeah.
and just, so I just thought of one, which is, like, whenever you have a meeting or anything,
mm-hmm.
it's really just the way that everyone is going to, like, start the meeting.
Yeah.
For a lot of things as well, not just meetings, conferences. They're going to say, go away, how? And it means, like, hi, everyone. Because,
mm-hmm.
It's just like, hi, everyone. But, like, in English, you would probably, if you're in a conference or anything like that, or in a meeting, you'd probably say, hello. And you probably wouldn't say everyone. Because saying,
mm-hmm.
hi, everyone, just for some reason, it could be okay,
mm-hmm.
but, like, often just sounds a little like
yeah.
you just don't need to. You just say
right.
hi.
Right.
Oh.
So there's like that's a simple translation, but like what the hell?
I have another one. So I don't remember the Chinese, but I was reading a book, Little Soldiers, written by a journalist who was from her parents were Chinese, but she grew up in the U.S. and she came here. She put her children in kindergarten. In China, and so she was watching them go through the Chinese education system, and there was a competition at the school, and the local Chinese parents during the competition were really like cheering for their kids, and they were saying the equivalent of add oil.
Yeah.
Add well.
Jiao.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
And that struck me as very funny because we would just say go 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 or something like that, like very obvious.
Yeah.
We want you to do this, so go. But instead, here it was add oil, which is a very different...
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, if you're in a class or if you're translating between these two,
yeah.
do you say, like, when someone asks you, what does jiao mean? Do you say add oil?
Yeah.
Which is just meaningless English, doesn't it? You know,
right.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Or do you say, like, go?
Yeah.
But it does not mean, like...
Not directly translated mean go, but that's when you would use it.
Yeah, and it's all sorts of
except for if you were actually cooking and you meant add oil. Yeah.
I've made
so
that joke before.
Nuances.
It's a really, like, bad joke.
Well,
like, I've been cooking with Chinese people
yeah.
and I've been like, oh, 1K, jiao.
And they're like, wait, that's a totally different context. That's not even funny.
No.
Did they find it funny?
I don't think anyone finds it funny because it's just such an obvious joke.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure, like, 2-year-olds or five, well, they can't speak, 5-year-olds would, like, say
yeah,
that
yeah,
and think
yeah.
they're hilarious.
But it feels like you know something when you know that, right?
Yeah.
If you can remember it, like, you remembered it. But yeah.
Now I can go.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming and doing this tonight.
Thanks for inviting me.
This has been super interesting.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Changing Scripts podcast. Again, this is a sister project with my own language learning vlogging on YouTube, also called Changing Scripts, so come on over and take a peek at that. Again, if you are learning the Chinese language, or if you're coming from the Chinese language learning another language, I'd love to interview you for this podcast. Please feel free to contact me in any social media way that you see fit. Go ahead and contact me, and we will hash out how to get you on the sound creation known as the Changing Scripts podcast. A lot more is coming your way soon.